If you have an opinion about what you have heard and want to share it, drop a review on iTunes. We don't have very many, and we would actually like to hear some. So good, bad, or indifferent, even if you just want to tell us a story.
We have no idea if we're any good or not.
Yeah. Help us find out, will you?
Oh, I totally almost just completely forgot about it till you dropped that joke just now, Kevin.
We have, there's all kinds of news.
I was, no, before we get into that, in this part, I just real quick, I was at Wheatsville shopping earlier today, which for those of you
Wheatsville
that,
Co-op?
Wheatsville Co-op.
Which is an Austin crunchy grocery store.
Right, yeah.
It's the hippie grocery store.
I'm an owner of the Co-op.
Oh, yes, and, the presence of greatness.
Me and 70,000 other people. Right. And so I was shopping at the Co-op today. And the guy that was like, who was my cashier, was telling lots of jokes to the dude that was in line in front of me, and I wasn't like listening to any of the jokes, but then I tuned in to hear him say the last one, which was he goes, "Why did the hipster eat a steak even though he was a vegan?"
I don't know.
Because he needed more irony in his diet.
Oh, good God.
And I was like, you know what? I'm going to tell that joke on the show tonight because I'm going to fucking out Kevin.
Well, you know how the hipster burned his mouth, don't you?
No.
Because he ate his food before it was cool.
See, that's a much funnier joke.
That's a really good joke.
Yeah. Oh, good God. All right. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Mark.
Somebody likes it.
Hey, so well, first of all, it's been a little bit since we've gotten back together.
Nice
to see you guys. Everybody looks taller.
Baseball intervened.
Yes.
It worked out well.
It did. But that said, that has given Crazy a little time to ferment and germinate, as it were. Let's start with the fact that Diddy has changed his name to Love.
But then he claimed that he was kidding.
I don't know.
He did like a selfie video on a beach saying that he was no longer
going to answer to any of his monikers.
Is
he just Love or is it P Love?
Well, here's what we got. The direct quote is, "I will not be answering to Puffy, Diddy, Puff Daddy, any of my other monikers, but Love or Brother Love." So you could also
How does he sign his checks?
Brother Love.
Okay, good.
Or B Love.
He's like on a B. I feel like maybe he like drops
love
some ecstasy.
Comma,
it's like a paw print.
Seriously.
Like, I don't know.
He thought this was a really good idea.
He like took some ecstasy and he was like, "What?" But then he claimed he walked that back like a day or so later, saying that he was just kidding. But
he's like, "You can just call me all those names."
I didn't see anything other
than
that.
Like a high concept joke, I guess. Like,
it does say that a day ago on Sky News that he backtracked on his latest new name, Brother Love. I was like, that's news.
So he had like a trusted publicist who was like, "Dude."
Dude, like, well, I just thought, I mean, yeah, probably. I thought that basically, you know, since now his whole life, he's like a billionaire and he's high society. Like, he just pretty much has only been going by Sean Combs, you know, for at least 10 years
now.
You
got to figure his close family and whatnot calls him Sean.
Right. Well, if you even see him in the news, they don't say, you know, like, you know, it used to
be
Diddy.
Does he have kids? So I wonder if they call him Daddy and he'd like get mad.
Because he's no longer answering to that moniker.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Brother Love to you, children. Okay. And the other news, and I'm either getting out in front of this or I'm bringing it up because Shane won't, but Morrissey has canceled another show.
In LA or something?
No way.
And I learned all kinds of, there's all kinds of weird shenanigans on the side of this. One is, his next show is in L.A. This one was in, like, Paso Robles or some
I think
place
it was Paso there. Robles.
Yeah. But anyway, so that one, there are some hot takes from people who are really pissed because that show was, like, that people were at the show when that show got canceled.
Yeah,
he
canceled it because he said it was cold. Too cold.
It was too cold. Couldn't be bothered.
Well, that's like bad for
Princess
throat.
Morrissey.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, I stopped even trying to go to that fucker's show. It's like, have you seen?
Well, so let me give this. Can I give the sidebar?
Yes,
you,
please.
You want to tell your story first?
No.
Okay. So the two sidebars. One is his next show is in L.A. and the mayor of L.A. who is, Garcetti. I think he might have been. I don't know that this is true, but that name rings a bell. I wonder if he was one
part
of the
Gil Garcetti.
Yeah, it might have been Gil Garcetti.
That was the guy who was like the DA during the O.J.
Right. Anyway, trial. There's a Garcetti who is now mayor of Los Angeles.
That would be a weird coincidence.
Anyway, and they made November 10th like Moz Day in L.A. and put out this proclamation about how great he is. And I was like, really? I was like, he might still cancel. Like, that's the way that guy
might
operates.
Cancel Moz Day, actually.
Well, yeah. So there's that. There's that little, like, that's L.A. being L.A. And then the other thing was, and I thought this was particularly interesting, somebody counted the number of shows that he's canceled since 2002. Does anybody want to just hazard a guess at that number? Because I was
surprised. More than two.
Out of how many shows?
Oh, I have no idea. They didn't give a percentage. They
I'm
just
say
gave
it's
an overall
north of 100.
Shane?
I know it's way north of that because he canceled two in Austin in between 2003 and 2004.
124.
Yeah.
124 shows. So, anyway.
Oh, and he canceled one in Austin when I tried to go see him in high school. So, if you want to go back a little bit further than that.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, it struck me as, I mean, you would think, like, I mean, it's kind of the opposite of, like, you know, David Bowie sold shares on the future albums that he might put out. Like, it seems like you're kind of playing the market anytime you go buy a ticket to a Morrissey show.
It's true. You know, I'm
except
a big,
there's really no return there.
Well, only if you see the show, and then it's, yeah, right, exactly.
I was watching his video, you know, I was almost going to bring it up today on A Few Minutes With, but I didn't want to totally torment Kev, but it's a good watch. It's his new single, and I believe it's like I Stayed in Bed All Day. And it starts out in the video where he's being wheeled in, like, through all these hallways in a wheelchair, no sound. And then then the band starts, and he gets wheeled in and deposited on another chair that doesn't roll around. And then he sings the whole song, proceeded to be seated in that chair. There's no explanation ever given. And
that sort of explains itself, doesn't it? You know, like.
No, I know, but I mean, there's no explanation.
Like,
I have
to do a video, so you guys just prop me up. And
no, but I mean, it goes on for like 30 seconds when he's getting wheeled around these hallways, like with squeaky. You know, I don't know if he had hurt himself or something, but I liken it to like when he used to just randomly wear a hearing aid back in the Smiths for no reason.
you're like 28. Like,
well, you know, Peter Buck wore pajamas for an entire year. Peter Buck from R.E.M. For whatever reason, like,
hey, if he can,
that was his like Hugh Hefner.
I guess that was days. He was probably between marriages. I know he was divorced at some point, so he just was like,
that sounds
it.
Like the shit you do between marriages, and you're really in a member of a really famous band. I gotta say about that Morrissey song though, the music was so great when it started out, and I had such high hopes, and then he started singing, and that says something as coming from a Morrissey fan. Like, his voice sounds amazing, but man, is he sincerely phoning his lyrics in these days.
Coasting a little bit.
A little bit?
Yeah.
Can I just say something real quick? You know, sure. It's not coasting? Mark's marvelous mustache.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a porn stash. It's a Sergeant Pepper stash.
No, Mark's going to be making craft cocktails before the evening. Actually,
that's
he's made
right.
himself one.
Yeah.
He already is.
I actually saw your mustache through the window when you came in and I got here and I meant to say how impressed I was with it.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Good stuff. All right.
Yeah. So let's get to the item at hand. So anyway, good to see you guys again. Today we're going to be talking about the band Wand, led by a guy named Corey Hansen out of L.A. and he cut his teeth. Backing Michael Cronin and Ty Siegel, and you can and apparently the first couple of albums that they put out were really sort of, you know, kind of paced the same way. Like that whole, like, we got to put out as many albums as we can as quickly as we can.
Yeah, he was putting out like two a year. I dug up a little bit of info on this project, and apparently, yeah, they were putting out something like every 6 months, and it was a lot more like garagey. Because
it was not garagey. I went back and listened to it.
No. Shane says no on the garage.
It sounds like heavy metal. It's we'll listen to one of those songs.
Well, I feel like if you like collaborate with Ty, do we know if it's Siegel or Seagal? Either way,
I don't know.
If you collaborate with that guy, you're just gonna get affixed the garage moniker.
Yeah, it does not sound anything like him.
And I don't think this record sounds garagey.
Well,
either.
And I do think that for whatever reason, and I haven't read even when we covered. The Ty Siegel record Metamorphosis a year or two ago, I don't recall him talking about why he works the way that he does. I mean, one of the things that pops up like every so often, even if we're not talking about that scene or any of those artists, is like, Shane, I think you came in here one day and said like that you had a conversation with somebody at a bar about like does Ty Siegel put out music too often or not?
No,
often
that was me.
Was that
I was
you?
Talking to, I was talking to Bill Davis.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then might as well. It's all 6-1.
I don't remember that conversation, but that is an
You weren't there. I ran to him randomly.
But that's a weird. I mean, I can't even imagine.
Bill Davis is a friend of Ty Siegel. Some of the people on this ship. So anyway, yeah, and another musician. But anyway, yeah, and I think it's that's the chicken and egg conversation about that scene. But the thing that I have come across over and over again, not in just listening to the record, but then also reading some accounts of it, is that this album in particular was, at least in terms of its creation, was a departure from the way that some of the others in that scene have been put together. So, anyway.
Well, apparently they took and we're talking about Plum, I guess, the name of the record.
Yeah, this release dropped September 22nd of this year. So it hasn't been out for very long as of the time that we're recording. So we take the little snow globe of that L.A. garage rock scene, right? And so Ty Siegel and Michael Cronin work together a lot. They each have their own. You can tell a Michael Cronin song from a Ty Siegel song, but you can also tell that there are some inherent similarities and a lot of overlap. And I get the impression, and Shane, I definitely want to get your take, because I didn't go back and listen to a lot of the older stuff, if Corey Hansen's work was like that. But the impression that I got on this particular album was that there are a couple of new band members, including a female vocalist, which they had not had before. And then beyond that, a lot of the songs were written collaboratively. So instead of it being sort of the Corey Hansen show and everybody else kind of, you know, filling a role under that umbrella, they're more of a band this time out. And they took 2 years to put it together, which is a lot longer than they had been gestating.
Yeah. So it sounds like there's, I mean, having not gone back and listened to the older stuff, but it sounds like there's a little bit more variation. The songs are more finished.
Yeah, the songs are way better. I'm just going to say this real quick. I'm going to interject. This is how I feel about this album, Kevin, is that knowing how big of an Astros fan you are and watching the Astros win the World Series last week, boy, you've just encountered a lot of home runs lately, haven't you?
Oh, see? Like, I mean, a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really sweet.
This album is in my like top five best albums, I think, that
well,
we've
it's funny
to.
Too, because there is, and I don't, like, I say
it's
this.
The best albums on the show that we've reviewed, not in the world.
Well, it's cool to hear you say that. Like, and I've really enjoyed it too. But, and Ryan, I want to get your take and Mark, your take as well. There's one of these tracks in particular that I thought the vocal composition or the vocal styling on that particular track is a little similar to the way that you phrase in when you sing. And I was like, I wasn't listening for it. I was like, oh, that's a little Shaney. I was like, what the hey?
That.
Yeah. So anyway, and that's what we'll call you from now. Lil Shaney.
Lil Shaney.
that's your rap name.
That's your
Lil Shaney. I like that. Yeah. I'm going to have to get some kind of instead of getting a grill, it'll be like wax teeth or something.
Yeah, he's nice. Bogart Mark's mustache and
Yeah.
Let's go the whole, just go whole to different duray. Yeah.
Yeah, accepting the I wish they wouldn't jam quite as much. And the last song,
the last couple tracks are a little jammy.
I actually liked the second to last song quite a bit, but that last song, just take the scissors to it, in my opinion. But other than that, I fucking love this album. But I will tell you real quick, so I'd read a couple of reviews, and then I looked at what is it?
The internet.
Oh, shut up! There was a review by AllMusic, and I've had zero patience for these reviewers on the site for a long, long time. Basically, it's like dudes that they don't pay. That it's just their like opinions as music listeners. It's not like actually reviewing. So right. I read.
I always thought AllMusic was just. Like,
oh, no, AllMusic is the
it's like encyclopedia of bands.
I'll show you. They have reviews too. We'll read this because I want to read this guy's review. But basically, the guy was saying, he was like, well, now they just sound like indie rock. And they should get their pedal. I mean, swear to God, he's like, this isn't too far away from what Wilco did. And like, okay, well, you disgruntled employee. Like, you're not saying anything about their actual fucking music. Like, so I went back and I was like, well, I mean, because he was like, well, they need to get back and be like a superlative psych rock band with elements of metal that they had before, rather than this middle of the road indie rock band.
It's just a guy who was a fan of the old stuff,
right?
And
they've
changed up a little bit, and now he's pissed.
But that's exactly what it is. But
and he pretty much says it. I read that piece too.
Like, yeah. We need to read some. It is, the writing is so bad. And all, not only that, but it's complete. Like, he has three paragraphs in it, I believe, and he basically says the exact same thing in every paragraph, including name dropping Wilco multiple times in the review.
Hey, got it, pal.
Yeah, no, I got it, dude. You liked what they did. So I went and listened to their first record, Gollum, and boy, is it different. And I think if we don't put it on the air here, at least in one of our breaks, I would really like it if you guys listened to just a little bit and hear how I can understand why. I can understand why if this dude really liked this band and then this band version 2 came out, like how you would not like that band. But having said that, it's not supposed to be completely just all about him. And
let's do this. Why don't we play a track, and then when we come back on the other side, within the context of playing or talking about whatever it is we're about to hear, Ryan, I want to get your take as well.
For sure. I have one.
Let's do the title track. Why don't we start with Plum? There's like an Amazon wish list for like the tracks that would come on anytime that you walked into a room, like I'd push that one up to the top of my current list. Like, I just really get a kick out of that track. Not a lot of narrative going on in that video.
I was just when did Andy Warhol start making nature documentaries that are also
also the word videos. it felt like the lyrics themselves, like basically he wrote them in like at one pass when he was tripping on acid.
I can see that.
Well, and I want to make one last comment, and then I want to ask Ryan the larger question. But I think that that whole video ends up kind of being, and if you get a chance, check that video out.
It's a minute
Plum.
Long of just a goose eating grass and then a chicken wandering around.
Well, yeah.
And they show some bees and some grass.
Yeah, visually, it's a little abstract. But I thought the thing that I thought was really interesting about that is when they have the two different lyrical conversations that are happening at the same time at the end.
Well, like, I thought that was really interesting because I didn't notice this before. So on the bottom there were subtitles for the lyrics on the video, and what the female Sophia, I don't know her last name, she's doing the harmonies. Instead of harmonizing with what he's singing, she's singing a different vocal part.
Argeen.
Yes. Bless you. And yeah. she's singing a complete, like, different words. Yeah, I got that from Kevin. And
your first name? Sorry, that was another Kevin thing.
Right, sure. I thought that...
kind of a point, counterpoint kind of thing.
It is a little
on.
Bit of a point.
It was really interesting. I fucking love that song.
Yeah, I dig that song a lot. It reminds me a little bit of, like, and I'm always like the guy who says this with this, but it's like Spoon fronted by Tom York.
Oh, sure. Yeah, there's
and
some
Tom
of that.
York, I mean,
yeah.
His voice just happens to sound like Tom York.
I don't know. You hate this band, but there's some Pavement in there, too, for me. Like,
I don't
a little
hate
bit.
Pavement.
They just sound like they
can't be bothered.
They can't be bothered to tune their guitars.
Recording and somebody...
Their picks are too heavy.
There's some Pavement in there, too.
They have the Morrissey work ethic of...
let's not get yes.
There are several Pavement songs I like. I just I'm not over the moon about Pavement. I like Crooked Rain quite a bit.
Crooked Rain.
Yeah, anyway, yeah. Right. So and with regard to the record that we're actually covering,
I like this record. I think I would like it even more the more I heard it. With the exception of the last two songs.
Oh, I liked the second to last song. I just don't need all the jamming.
Well, so here's a little backstory. This is not on Spotify, so I listened to just like a feed of it on YouTube. So I didn't know the names of any of the songs, and apparently there's not like a split between next to last and last song. So I was like sitting in the tub with my little Bluetooth speaker, and I was like, when is this fucking song going to end? It turns out it was two different songs.
Yeah, I had the same thing, too. But I went and I pulled up a track listing and tried to follow the tracks. Unfortunately, some of the tracks are like minute long or 2 minute long, just like
yeah, the stuff that's like 4 minutes and under, I'm all about. And it is like more of a repeated listening kind of thing because it's a little complex. But
you know what?
But that... Prog stuff at the end.
Look, that second to last song, like I really didn't like the jamming stuff until I liked the song part, but I didn't like the jamming stuff until I re-listened to it and thought, oh, this sounds like Sonic Youth. And once I put that in my head in that context, it changed it for me a little bit. So, and that was Ginger, the Trap, which is, or no, I guess that was Blue Cloud. Ginger was like two minutes long of like instrumental stuff. The Trap was like the real only like ballad song. That song fucking killed, I thought.
Yeah, no, I do think that like one of the things that you don't expect from a band that's out of the LA garage scene is this are like kind of quiet, contemplative moments. And I thought this album had some of that.
It doesn't sound like garage.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like garage to me at all. But I think what he's saying, and they're pegged as that in that scene in the reviews that you read about the band. The only song that sounded at all to me like garagey was Be Karma, which sounded to me like the White Stripes with an actual rhythm section.
The guitar riff on that is almost exactly the same as Driver 8 from... R.E.M. from Fables of the Reconstruction.
And it's also, I think, Cinnamon Girl, I think, is the melody.
Well, now we have to play it. Oh, and the other thing is, I think the clown in that video is Homeboy's brother, the lead singer's brother.
I haven't seen that video, but now I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
Does he clown around for a living?
We should probably watch it.
You want to watch that?
Children's parties and
yes.
All right, hey,
plays weird art rock.
So I want to listen to this song, but during the break, also, I really want you guys, before we continue on and talk more about this band, I want us to behind the scenes listen to something off their first record,
yeah,
so we can see how fucking different it is.
Okay.
But what are we listening to?
Now let's do Be Karma.
Oh, look, right there off to the side, it says Cinnamon Girl. So, I don't know.
It's like it heard you.
Uh-huh.
Not storyboarded, or if, let me say this, if it was storyboarded,
yeah,
it's one of the most brilliant productions ever. Like
it is like the generator of a thousand nightmares.
if you love clowns, really, that's just about it. If you love clowns, it's a great video.
I don't know.
Well, and apparently they have a mascot which seems to be growing in each video, because it was like a little tiny baby chick duck or something, and now it's like a
It's a weird convention.
So this video continues the theme from the previous video, where they have the subtitles of the lyrics, and they also have a small animated
Whenever the female vocals come in, they're in red, which I don't know if that's sexist or not, but it's so you
I think
never,
you're
wait a minute.
Creating outrage where none exists.
Yeah, why the fuck really does that even
mean? That's really just carry
that was actually
karaoke.
A joke, fellas.
Okay.
Try to keep up.
Okay.
I was pretty sure it was a joke, but
anyway, good song.
Yeah.
But that open, I've heard Driver 8 so many times that, like,
I never would have thought that in a million years had you not said that.
But now, can you not hear it?
While we were watching, you brought up Pictures of Matchstick Man, which totally hear that melody.
It was that melody, Pictures of Matchstick Man, in the little in that B part, and that breakdown a little bit. Yeah.
I thought, I thought that there's part of that. You know, again, like, he doesn't always wear the Ty Siegel stuff on his sleeve, but that track has a lot of it. Like,
yeah, I agree
very
with that.
Clear. But anyway,
he writes some obtuse lyrics.
Yeah, and I kind of appreciate, that's one of the things I actually do appreciate about him, because I do like it when lyrics are kind of open to interpretation. And, good luck figuring this one out.
No, I like it too, but these are just a little too much. Like, as far as like,
a bit outside.
They're just not. They don't really follow the melody. I don't know, but I don't know. It's not like a deal killer by any stretch of the imagination. They're just.
Well, they're like scratch vocals, but more creative.
Well, I mean, it's just, I feel like it's the we're talking, there's one, it's what, it's literally what they're, what he's singing, you know, to himself while they're writing the songs and just writing them down and not ever touching them again. That's what it seems like.
I think lyrically, one of the things that struck me just in, well, mostly in reading about this album, but also like just, you know, it's hard not to kind of take these into account when you're watching the video and they run the lyrics across the bottom. Is that this record was supposedly born out of a lot of like romantic heartbreak. Like a lot of the tracks were apparently written out of that. But I mean, to you guys' point, like, yeah, they come off a little bit nonsensical, almost whimsical.
A little bit nonsensical?
Well, sure. maybe I'm maybe completely nonsensical, but yeah. But it also doesn't come off like
something about like your heart and alludes.
Yeah,
to
it's not like he's making up his own words or anything. Like, we're not getting into like early Cocteau
Twins
here.
Not a Cigarose thing.
Yeah.
Didn't they have, a record that was just like parentheses?
Cigarose.
Yeah, that's what it was called.
That's
a
great record.
And you know, the weird thing is like they actually couldn't put it in a section at the store. They just had to lay them all on the floor. All right. Well, we're probably running a little bit over. Do we want to do the break?
Let's go to the intermission.
Okay.
Let's do it. So for this week, I want to talk about, well, a band that's kind of a collaboration, Broken Bells.
Kind of a collaboration?
Well, I guess it is.
It is a collaboration between two dudes.
Aren't all bands collaborations?
Well, it's James Mercer and Danger Mouse, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, they have a song that I'm a fan of, and we'll figure out what the rest of the fellas think. Does have a video, but it's called The High Road. And as I recall, it's been a little while since I watched it, but there's not a lot going on. But I do like
so that's kind of par for the course of two of the videos we've seen tonight.
It's like, here's something I saw once.
I can't remember what it was. I think there's something going on.
Oh, hell, Chewbacca. All right. Stand corrected. There's a little bit going on in that video.
A little.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I guess I only watched it once, and I may have been a bit intoxicated. I just remembered them walking around. But there's more than that.
I mean, that's mostly what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. But other things happen in the periphery.
They, like, fight a kid.
James Mercer fights a kid, and then there's a horse standing in the middle of the road.
I was kind of a
burlesque dancer.
Yeah, she's like dressed up like Madonna in 1989.
I was kind of wondering if it was the same road from that Tom Petty video that we watched a few weeks ago.
Could be. It just evolved a little bit.
Yeah. Not that much, though.
Well, still surreal.
Yes.
Well, that's true. Yes, it definitely was. What a great fucking song.
Such a great song. You and I have never talked about that, but I can't get enough of it. And you're right. That coda
is
amazing.
Brilliant.
And it's almost impossible to not sing along with.
I was singing along with it.
I was, too.
And plus, well, part of the reason is, like, you have all this stuff going on, and then just those lyrics are so perfect, and it just comes out of nowhere. It's sort of like a Layla. In fact,
the best part of Layla is the coda.
The best part is the coda. Look, I love codas, like well-done codas, as much as I hate fucking the saxophone and rock.
Most people
songs.
Know what a coda is, but it's the part of the last part of the song that's kind of tacked on that's different.
That's different, right. Yeah, that shit. And also, I never noticed until right now how the piano playing, like there's some Layla, there's some kind of percussive, like
a little syncopated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I had never noticed that before.
Kevin, what'd you think?
No, I thought it was great. I needed to hold that for a beat, but no, I'm exactly with you guys. I thought that song's. I do think that song's terrific, and it is. It's one of those where it just. It grabs you a little bit by the moment, and you really without knowing that you're doing it, it's kind of hard not to sing along with it.
Those two guys, I mean, James Mercer.
I don't know much about Danger Mouse. Now, James Mercer obviously is a machine.
Well, he's done a lot of production work, but like really interesting stuff. Like, he first came up when he, God, I forget how long ago this was, maybe 2003, when he took... Jay-Z's The Black Album and the Beatles' White Album, and then combined them, did a mashup, and they called it the Gray Album, and that was his first like claim to fame. But he's done other stuff. He's worked with a ton of people. Like, I know that he, a couple of years.
Did you say Gnarls Barkley? Mark brought it
yeah,
up.
Yeah, and he was, I was going to say, and that was the second real big claim to fame. He was one half of Gnarls Barkley. And then he also did a lot of production work. A couple of years ago, he fucking put out a, like the entire record was like a, it was like spaghetti Western music. Like
Ennio like Morricone.
Right. Yeah. And he did a lot of the recording with the people that that actually recorded on a lot of those like soundtracks, like Good, Bad, and the Ugly and that stuff.
That's cool.
And also he's a drummer. He's he's got a lot going
on. Apparently his real name is Brian.
That is true. Yeah, because I found that out because he would joke around how the Italian musicians, when he went to record that spaghetti Western, they would call him Brian.
Nice.
But yeah, I just want to say accepting, like, so that guy pretty much, his resume is pretty fucking spotless. And then you put him with James Mercer, who accepting the last Shins record, which I absolutely hated, but there's a return to form on the most recent one, which has a horrible name. God, what is the? It's something about.
I don't recall what it is, but I've listened to a bunch of Shins, and I feel about the Shins the same way I do about Death Cab for Cutie. Like when they nail it, they really.
Oh
nail
no
it,
no no!
And a bunch of it is kind of like. I feel
a lot the same way about that, except I think that they're a really good repeated listening. Full album band.
Could be. I've owned a couple. And like
James Mercer's vocals, for me, that's my sweet spot.
Oh, like, yeah. You know what? I used to, even on songs
that I'm not that crazy about, singing, he always sounds great.
Yeah, the guy could be singing like a fucking toilet paper book. Jingle. I really... And I would go for it.
I used to say about that band, like, you know, I had friends that loved them. And
the Shins.
The Shins. And I always say, well, I don't love them, but I really like them. And
I saw them.
But I love them now.
I saw them on like the inside stage at Stubbs. It was probably like, and this is not me trying to be cool. It's just a thing. The show was packed. But anyway, it was before they'd kind of become the Shins or whatever.
Oh, I was with you at that show, dude. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I think I was. Yeah.
Anyway.
Like in 2001.
They were a great live show. And I met a couple of those guys afterwards, and they couldn't have been nicer. And. More humble or whatever. Maybe they're dicks now, but I doubt it.
Well, yeah. they tend to like doing pop-up shows during South by Southwest and odd places. They've done like parking garages.
Well,
and
if I'm not wrong, if I'm not mistaken, he's pretty much replaced that entire band.
James Mercer has?
Yeah.
Oh.
But, so I could be wrong. But
after the incident,
well,
the couple guys I met are working day jobs. Now,
yeah. So. Well, he said before, like, those are my songs, and this is the band that I hire to play my songs, or something along those lines. It's less dickish, but still kind of a dick. So
isn't like that why you called your band Shane Bartell rather than a thing? So
yes.
You could have control of it. I mean, that makes it perfect sense.
No. Control over it, but. That's a whole other conversation, my friend.
All right. Well, let's get back into it. Hey, you ever wondered what would it sound like if the Melvins were fronted by Tom York? I mean, Shane, you've been saying... grungy or you've been
no,
saying
that's a metal-y.
But this is more grunge, like, you know,
I don't
freaking,
know there's
like,
that terms like that sounds like they detuned their instruments. I've seen fucking metal shows
so for
that
context
like that.
Before when we came out of the intermission, we all just took a moment to listen to a previous album, Golem, by
yeah,
Ron.
We listened to a couple tracks,
so that's what
and
we're
it's just
about
this
now.
Heavy sludgy guitar with a guy who for all the world to me sounds like Tom York.
Right. Well,
there's
and
some
Shane,
psychedelic rock on top of that.
I think the first song is a little more psychedelic rock. We listen to parts of two different songs.
Yeah.
Like
there's some swirly stuff in there.
Well, and I will say that, like, you know, again, using
it's
the
not like fucking Mastodon,
using that Ty Segall connection that we talked about a little bit in the first half of the show, like it is that the tracks that we listened to off their initial record just now were not like they're just like slower and more deliberate and super heavy. And so, you know, to that end,
that's where I was getting the Melvins thing.
Yeah, I get what you're saying about the Melvins. Like definitely
it's
with
sludgy.
Sludgy, sure, sure. It's just not.
It does not sound like
it,
the
it
band
doesn't
that we've
sound
been
like the band
about.
We've been. And that was only 2 years ago. I mean, that's basically like, how is that the same band?
Well,
it's not because they added two
you know
other
the,
people.
The other thing that I was thinking about this week as I was listening to this record, like Elephant Six, like in spots. Like, I mean, it's kind of all over the map.
Yeah.
I mean, but
no,
it
I
all pretty
that.
Much works. But, like, there was some Elephant Six stuff, and that what we just listened to would not be affiliated.
No, the people that made the music, what we just listened to, would go over and, like, beat up the people
the
in
people
Elephant
in Six. Elephant Six. Yeah. Elephant Six being a collective of, like, largely poppy, kind of weird.
Beach influence. Boys-y.
Yeah,
Beatlesque, like... Mostly 90s, I guess.
Yeah, apples and
I'm
stereo.
Just, I'm just picture. I'm trying to picture that guy in the old Ford or whatever it was from that video, and his brother in the clown outfit, like playing this
making
music
that
we
music?
Just listened to.
Yeah, they have evolved.
Well, and again, it's like part of that
change.
Deal is
I wouldn't
to,
say
like,
evolved. I would say changed. I'm
well,
sorry,
evolved.
To change is fair. Like I guess what I would say is that like, you know. If you're putting, there's a difference between putting out a record every 6 months and then taking 2 years to try and do something that has a finer point to it. Like it feels like
well,
I can hear the effort.
Yeah.
I mean, look, that's why I wanted you guys to fucking listen to that shit. But everything that you're saying right now, but there's a difference between taking 2 years to polish songs and completely making your band sound in. Zero ways like the band it was before.
180 degree turnaround.
Well, and I, you know, and I wonder how much of that is just taking the like turning this seeding some collaborative effort.
Absolutely. Like, well, that's partially got to be it, and partially like taking the time to just grow as an artist.
I mean,
you know,
yeah.
Maybe it's just me, but I would say that I was able, having listened to both of these albums, I was able to draw some connections there. There's a little bit of that grunginess in some of the prog rock type of stuff.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And it's not like all traces of it are gone. I don't think that that's the case at all. But
sure.
But there are.
But those are
definitely quiet moments.
Those
on this
are
other thing.
There are definite connections, but those threads are gossamer, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I just find it fascinating. You don't often see bands with such a distinctive style, say like fuck it, crumple
it's
up.
It's like if the Cure in like 1988 had decided to do a funk record next.
that is exactly what it's like. Yeah, or all of a sudden like if you had like Nine Inch Nails, like the next record they did was all banjo and mandolin.
Yeah,
something like that, you know.
Although yeah, I would pay to see that show. Like that would
like,
have been fascinating.
Well,
didn't you do like a kind of countrified version of I wanna what is it? Was it Closer?
Yes.
I
do.
Fuck you like an animal.
Well, that's what it would sound like.
Yeah.
It's not nice.
Shall we listen to another one, fellas? Off the new
We wanna yeah. listen to one of the newbies?
Yeah, so well do you guys have so I picked a couple of tracks already and I have a couple more that I'm drawn to, but you know, what do you think? Shane,
I would
love to listen
to The Trap.
Okay, let's do that.
It's very different from what we listened to before.
Caught in a trap, last one after that, fleeing in the snow, never going home. I guess they're right. I'm missing tonight, sweetest song I know, the only one I wrote. To survive in the end, you've got to pretend it is worth surviving.
You know, I think one of the things that is really clear to me at least, about people who are in like in that we'll call it the LA psych bubble, although I think that that is not really what this is. Like, this is outside of that, beyond it. But I think you, one thing that you can say about all those guys that we've talked about, including the band that we're talking about tonight, is that they're really students of, like, they're just, it's like they can't wait to create something interesting. And I say that because we were just listening, the track that we were just listening to, I couldn't figure out what sounded so familiar about it to me. And anyway, it reminds me of a couple of old Straight Jacket Fitz tracks from the full lineup of that band that hasn't existed in 25 years.
Straight Jacket Fitz were like, a New Zealand band.
They were a New Zealand band on Flying Nun.
Flying Nun Records, yeah.
Yeah, and they had sort of at their height, and they were, you know, they flamed out pretty quickly, but like when they were going well, they had sort of a more contemplative songwriter, and then one who ended up doing stuff that was probably a little bit more, you know, reckless. But anyway, this sounded like the contemplative stuff that act put out. Now, I don't know whether or not,
these guys were influenced by that, but
it certainly sounds like, yeah, at the very least, they heard something that somebody else.
It sounds like they soak up a lot of different bands, because like there are a lot of different styles on this record, and they all kind of work like in and of themselves. And it, for whatever reason, sometimes when people like kind of ping pong around on a single record, different, you know, styles, it doesn't do the record any favors. But
it
feels like a band,
like the way it's recorded and the way that they're playing and the way that the song they do. There's a lot of different sounds, but it. There's a cohesion, right?
Well, and Mark and I were just talking during the break. Like, we both like the song that sounds kind of like Led Zeppelin.
It does sound like Led Zeppelin.
Like, it's got Bonham-esque drumming. Yeah. Like, he's, like, in the pocket hitting heavy. You know, I don't know if we have time, if we want to do four, but, like, anyway.
That song is High Rise.
High Rise,
if people want to check it out.
If people want to check that out, like, I dug it.
Okay.
So, yeah, Kevin, great.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, good stuff.
Album. I had nothing to do. I didn't create any of it, but I'm really happy.
We had a good 3 weeks to really stew on this one, and I think it was worth it.
You picked a good one. Yeah. All right, good. That was good stuff.
Well, I enjoyed it as well, so I'm glad you guys did.
Yay! Woo! Yeah, everybody wins. Mark, put some sort of boing-oing-oing in there or some shit like that.
Boing-oing-oing? Okay.
I don't know. Like,
I'll cue
like
that
children
up.
Clapping yeah. for whatever the emoji
children
is.
Clapping, children clapping show. And going, yay! No, I was thinking of like a puppet coming out of a jacket-in-the-box, like boing-oing-oing.
Or maybe a small duck in the lower right-hand corner of the...
You could have
on both of those things for you, fellas.
Do we need a mascot? Like, no.
We need a goose.
I guess we've got a cassette tape that's spilling out.
I just always thought the Kathy Ireland look of dull surprise was our mascot.
that's her resting face.
That sounds pretty great. I've never, ever even considered that before in my entire life, but that's really, whatever happened to Kathy Ireland?
I don't know.
She's
still squeaky.
Shane, what you got for us this week?
Phoebe Bridgers, Motion Sickness. So I love that song.
And, oh, that sounds great. And I was like,
did that video kill her? Is that what happened?
I'm wondering.
Video. Yeah. Also, did she overcome the video? Because it didn't seem the lyrics when she first got up there were not the same lyrics as she was singing. And by the end, they were.
She walked into a karaoke bar, Kevin.
Oh. Yes. Oh, yeah. I see.
But it ended up with the last line of her song.
She was overwhelmed by her emotional motion sickness.
Which, what a great fucking line.
Dude, I was really trying to find the lyrics to that, because like when I mean, I've only heard it once, so I can't quote them.
Unfortunately, there was no
There's a lot of good
no subtitles on that.
So I would say in the last month and a half, 2 months, that album that song comes off of is probably second in line of what I've been listening to.
Song's great.
Yeah, well,
really
that,
great.
Okay, well,
and you know me, like I don't normally notice lyrics unless they're uncommonly good or uncommonly bad, and then you know, like if I listen to the song enough, I'll finally notice them or whatever. I notice those right away. Like she's a
writer. That's her. That's,
she can write.
So the rest of her album, that is by far the most upbeat song on that record, and that record. It reminds me a lot of Julian Baker, who just turns out is one of the people that like is one of her biggest proponents and like a
yeah
huge
they should
fan.
Tour
and,
together I would go
I'm
to
pretty
that.
Sure they have okay. I'm pretty sure they've played a lot of shows together or a couple shows. She's in LA or Phoebe Bridgers is, but yeah, so the other thing I want to say about the song is every time I hear it, it makes me think of like if the way that the song is produced, if it had come out in 1997, it would have been like, it's got a huge like Sarah McLachlan kind of.
Oh, it does. She'd have been in Lilith Fair.
Yeah, she would have been like a star on Lilith Fair. That's
yeah.
So if you know the way she's singing and all, it literally could have come out of 1997, but it's a great, great song, and I wanted to share it with you guys.
Yeah,
and also
really great.
I have a feeling we're gonna hear more of.
So this
more of that
okay,
song.
So this is about where I started paying attention to the lyrics, because you did point out that like it would be annoying to be behind her in traffic because she's on like a little kid's scooter.
She's on a little kid's Razor scooter. Oh, and
you know they didn't block off traffic to make that like.
Well, I'm pretty sure they did. There was only the one car, but the thing that I love the most about that, I've watched this video a couple of times. That is a little unnerving. It does look like she died right there. She kicks. She does a back kick with her right leg or her left leg to like stop the scooter at one point on the sidewalk. So you know she's been riding that. She's only like 21 or 22.
She was born in 1994, which makes me feel old.
Yeah. One of the things I noticed about this is that she's like the persona in the video. She's trying to play this unaffected kind of person, but she's obviously having a good time. Scooting around on that thing, you can
well,
see
she's
her
having
like
a good
break
time,
a smile.
But she knows how to
times.
Do it.
But this is about where I started paying attention to the lyrics.
It's really sad.
I did find them. I have emotional motion sickness. Somebody roll the windows down. There are no words in the English language. I could scream to drown you out. And so apparently she's dating a musician. And why do you sing with an English accent? I guess it's too late to
change it now.
Now.
Yeah, that's a great.
I
line.
Know I'm never gonna let you have it, but I will try to drown you out. Like she's in a dysfunctional relationship with a
well, if you listen to the rest of the record, there's some songs. It's a sad, sad, sad record, but it's beautiful.
Oh, an older musician. You said when you met me, you were bored, and you were in a band when I was born.
You know what, Ryan? I enjoyed hearing her sing those lyrics.
A
lot
better
more
than me
than you reciting them.
Yeah. I'm gonna do it in slam poetry style.
Where's the ringtone?
Yeah. Emotional.
You met me.
Motion sickness. Emotional sickness.
Hey, it only took us to the 50-minute mark to break the show this week.
All right.
Who's got next week?
I do.
What you got for us?
The Cure, Blood Flowers.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, hell. Okay.
I never listened to it, and it was supposed to be the album that they regained their form on, so
I'd be curious to see if that's true.
It just sounded like he opened a Christmas present and he can't quite figure out what it is.
What did you say? Like, ho,
hey, just I'm going to listen with open ears, but like I haven't heard a Cure song since Wish I liked.
It came out in 1999, and I know nothing about the record.
I love 80s Cure and a little bit of early 90s.
I'm looking forward
but
to it.
Well, other than the fact that
I'm going to listen to it.
I hope you listen to it. Thank you. Yeah.
All right.
So yeah, we'll do the Cure Blood Flowers. So until then,
good times, everybody. I'm Kevin.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Shane.
I'm Mark.
This is Somebody Likes It.